Esperanza rising. Potatoes. Esperanza almost never left Mama's side. She sponged her with cool water and fed her teaspoons of broth throughout the day. Miguel offered to take over the sweeping job for her, but Esperanza wouldn't let him. Irene and Melina arrived each morning to check on Mama and to take the babies. Alfonso and Juan put up extra layers of newspaper and cardboard in the bedroom to keep out the November chill, and Isabel drew pictures to hang on the walls because she did not think the newspaper looked pretty enough for Mama. The doctor came back a few weeks later with more medicine. "She is not getting worse," he said, shaking his head, "but she is not getting better either." Mama drifted in and out of fitful sleep, and sometimes she called out for Abuelita. Esperanza could barely sit still and often paced around the small room. One morning, Mama said weakly, "Esperanza." Esperanza ran to her and took her hand. "Abuelita's blanket," she whispered. Esperanza pulled her valise from under her bed. She had not opened it since before the dust storm and saw that the fine brown powder had even found its way deep inside, as it had found its way into Mama's lungs. She lifted out the crocheting that Abuelita had started the night Papa died. It seemed like a lifetime ago. Had it only been a few months? She stretched out the zigzag rows. They reached from one side of Mama's bed to the other, but were only a few hands wide, looking more like a long scarf than the beginnings of a blanket. Esperanza could see Abuelita's hairs woven in, so that all her love and good wishes would go with them forever. She held the crocheting to her face and could still smell the smoke from the fire and the faintest scent of peppermint. Esperanza looked at Mama, breathing uneasily, her eyes closed. It was clear she needed Abuelita. They both needed her. But what was Esperanza to do? She picked up Mama's limp hand and kissed it. Then she handed the strip of zigzag rose to Mama, who clutched it to her chest. What had Abuelita told her when she had given her the bundle of crocheting? And then she remembered she had said, "Finish this for me, Esperanza, and promise me you'll take care of Mama." After Mama fell asleep, Esperanza picked up the needlework and began where Abuelita had left off. 10 stitches up to the top of the mountain, add 1 stitch. 9 stitches down to the bottom of the valley, skip 1. Her fingers were more nimble now, and her stitches were more even. The mountains and valleys in the blanket were easy. But as soon as she reached a mountain, she was headed back down into a valley again. Would she ever escape this valley she was living in, this valley of Mama being sick? What else had Abuelita said? After she had lived many mountains and valleys, they would be together again. She bent over her work, intent, and when her hair fell into her lap, she picked it up and wove it into the blanket. She cried when she thought of the wishes that would go into the blanket forever, because she was wishing that Mama would not die. The blanket grew longer, and Mama grew more pale. Women in the camp brought her extra skeins of yarn, and Esperanza didn't care that they didn't match. Each night when she went to bed, she put the growing blanket back over Mama, covering her in hopeful color. Lately, it seemed Esperanza could not interest Mama in anything. "Please, Mama," she begged, "you must eat more soup. Please, Mama, you must drink more juice. Mama, let me comb your hair. It will make you feel better." But Mama was listless, and Esperanza often found her weeping in silence. It was as if after all her hard work in getting them there, her strong and determined mother had given up. The fields frosted over and Mama began to have trouble breathing. The doctor came again with worse news. "She should be in the hospital. She's very weak, but more than that, she is depressed and needs nursing around the clock if she is to get stronger. It is a county hospital, so you would not have to pay, except for doctor's bills and medicines." Esperanza shook her head no. "The hospital is where people go to die." She began to cry. Isabel ran to her crying, too. Hortensia walked over and folded them both into her arms. "No, no, she is going to the hospital to get better." Hortensia wrapped Mama in blankets, and Alfonso drove them to Kern General Hospital in Bakersfield. The nurses would let Esperanza stay with Mama only a few minutes, and when Esperanza kissed her goodbye, Mama didn't say a word, but just shut her eyes and drifted off to sleep. Riding home in the truck that evening, Esperanza stared straight into the alley of light made from the truck's headlamps, feeling as if she were in a trance. Hortensia, what did the doctor mean when he said that Mama was depressed? In only a few months, she has lost her husband, her home, her money, and she is separated from her mother. It is a lot of strain on her body to cope with so many emotions in such a short time. Sometimes sadness and worry can make a person sicker. Your mother was very strong through your father's death and her journey here, for you. But when she got sick, everything became too much for her. Think of how helpless she must feel. Hortensia took out her handkerchief and blew her nose, too upset to continue. Esperanza felt like she had failed Mama in some way and wanted to make it up to her. Mama had been strong for her. Now it was her turn to be strong for Mama. She must show her that she didn't need to worry anymore. But how? Abuelita, I must write to Abuelita. Hortensia shook her head. I'm sure your uncles are still watching everything that goes in and out of the convent, and probably the post office, too. But maybe we can find someone going to Aguas Calientes who can carry a letter. I have to do something, said Esperanza, holding back tears. Hortensia put her arm around Esperanza. Don't worry, she said. The doctors and nurses know what she needs, and we will take care of one another. Esperanza didn't say what she really thought, that what Mama really needed was Abuelita. Because if sadness was making Mama sicker, then maybe some happiness would make her better. She just had to figure out a way to get her here. When she got back to camp, she went behind the cabin to pray in front of the washtub grotto. Someone had knitted a shawl and draped it over Our Lady's shoulders, and the sweetness of the gesture made Esperanza cry. Please, she said through her tears, I promised Abuelita I would take care of Mama. Show me how I can help her. The next day, Esperanza pulled a heavy shawl around her shoulders and waited for Miguel to come home from the fields. She paced in the area where the trucks unloaded and wrapped the wool tighter against the early winter cold. She had been thinking all day about what to do. Ever since Mama had first become sick over a month ago, they had no money coming in. The doctor's bills and medicines had used up most of what they'd saved. Now there were more bills. Alfonso and Hortensia offered to help, but they had done so much already, and they did not have much to spare. Besides, she could not accept their charity forever. Abuelita's ankle was probably healed by now, but if she hadn't been able to get her money out of Tio Luis's bank, then she would have no money with which to travel. If Esperanza could somehow get money to Abuelita, then maybe she could come sooner. When Miguel jumped off one of the trucks, she called to him. What have I done to deserve this honor, mi reina? He said, smiling and walking toward her. Please, Miguel, no teasing. I need help. I need to work so I can bring Abuelita to Mama. He was quiet, and Esperanza could tell he was thinking. But what could you do, and who would take care of the babies? I could work in the fields or in the sheds, and Melina and Irene have already offered to watch Pepe and Lupe. It's only men in the fields right now, and you're not old enough to work in the sheds. I am tall. I'll wear my hair up. They won't know. The problem is that it's the wrong time of year. They aren't packing anything right now, not until asparagus in the spring. My mother and Josefina are going to cut potato eyes for the next 3 weeks. Maybe you can go with them. But it is just 3 weeks, said Esperanza. I need more work than that. Anza, if you're good at cutting potato eyes, they will hire you to tie grapes. If you are good at tying grapes, they will hire you for asparagus. That's how it works. If you're good at one thing, then they hire you for another. She nodded. Can you tell me one more thing, Miguel?
Claro, certainly.
What are potato eyes?
Esperanza huddled with Josefina, Hortensia, and a small group of women waiting for the morning truck to take them to the sheds. A thick, tulle ground fog that hugged the earth settled in the valley surrounding them, as if they stood within a deep gray cloud. There was no wind, only silence and penetrating cold. Esperanza bundled in all the clothing that she could put on, old wool pants, a sweater, a ragged jacket, a wool cap, and thick gloves over thin gloves, all borrowed from friends in the camp. Hortensia had shown her how to heat a brick in the oven and bundle it in newspaper, and she hugged it to her body to keep warm as they rode on the truck. Since the driver could only see a few yards ahead, the truck rumbled slowly on the dirt roads. They passed miles of naked grapevines, stripped of their harvest and bereft of their leaves. Fading into the mist, the brown and twisted trunks looked frigid and lonely. The truck stopped at the big packing shed. It was really one long building with different open-air sections, as long as 6 train cars. The railroad tracks ran along one side, and docks for trucks ran along the other. Esperanza had heard Mama and the others talk about the sheds. How they were busy with people, women standing at long tables, packing the fruit, trucks coming and going with their loads fresh from the fields, and workers stocking the train cars that would later be hooked to a locomotive to take the fruit all over the United States. But cutting potato eyes was different. Since nothing was being packed, there wasn't the usual activity. Only 20 or so women gathered in the cavernous shed, sitting in a circle on upturned crates, protected from the wind by only a few stacks of empty boxes. The Mexican supervisor took their names. With all the clothing they were wearing, he barely looked at their faces. Josefina had told Esperanza that if she was a good worker, the bosses would not concern themselves with her age, so she knew she would have to work hard. Esperanza copied everything that Hortensia and Josefina did. When the women put the hot bricks between their feet to keep them warm while they worked, so did she. When they took off their outer gloves and worked in thin cotton ones, she did the same. Everyone had a metal bin sitting behind them. The field workers brought cold potatoes and filled up their bins. Hortensia took a potato, and then with a sharp knife, she cut it into chunks around the dimples. She tapped her knife on one of the dimples. "That is an eye," she whispered to Esperanza. "Leave 2 eyes in every piece, so there will be 2 chances for it to take root." Then she dropped the chunks into a burlap sack. When the sack was full, the field workers took it away. "Where do they take them?" she asked Hortensia. "To the fields. They plant the eye pieces, and then the potatoes grow." Esperanza picked up a knife. Now she knew where potatoes came from. The women began chatting. Some knew each other from camp, and one of them was Marta's aunt. "Is there any more talk of striking?" asked Josefina. "Things are quiet now, but they are still organizing," said Marta's aunt. "There is talk of striking in the spring when it is time to pick. We are afraid there will be problems. If they refuse to work, they will lose their cabins in the migrant camps. And then where will they live? Or worse, they will all be sent back to Mexico."
"How can they send all of them back?" asked Hortensia.
"Repatriation," said Marta's aunt. "La Migra, the immigration authorities, round up people who cause problems and check their papers. If they are not in order, or they do not happen to have their papers with them, the immigration officials send them back to Mexico. We have heard that they have sent people whose families have lived here for generations, those who are citizens and have never even been to Mexico." Esperanza remembered the train at the border and the people being herded onto it. She had been thankful for the papers that Abuelita's sisters had arranged. Marta's aunt said,
There is also some talk about harming Mexicans who continue to work. The other women, sitting around the circle, pretended to concentrate on their potatoes, but Esperanza noticed worried glances and raised eyebrows. Then Hortensia cleared her throat and said, "Are you saying that if we continue to work during the spring, your niece and her friends might harm us?" "We are praying that does not happen. My husband says we will not join them. We have too many mouths to feed. And he has told Marta she cannot stay with us. We can't risk being asked to leave the camp or losing our jobs because of our niece." Heads nodded in sympathy, and the circle was silent, except for the sounds of the knives cutting the crisp potatoes. "Is anyone going to Mexico for La Navidad?" asked another woman, wisely changing the subject. Esperanza kept cutting the potato eyes, but listened carefully, hoping someone was going to Aguascalientes for Christmas. But no one seemed to be traveling anywhere near there. A worker refilled Esperanza's metal bin with another load of cold potatoes. The rumbling noise brought her thoughts back to what Marta's aunt had said. If it was true that the strikers would threaten people who kept working, they might try and stop her, too. Esperanza thought of Mama in the hospital and Abuelita in Mexico, and how much depended on her being able to work. If she was lucky enough to have a job in the spring, no one was going to get in her way. A few nights before Christmas, Esperanza helped Isabel make a yarn doll for Sylvia while the others went to a camp meeting. Ever since Esperanza had taught Isabel how to make the dolls, it seemed there was a new one born each day, and monas of every color now sat in a line on their pillows. "Sylvia will be so surprised," said Isabel. "She has never had a doll before." "We'll make some clothes for it, too," said Esperanza. "What was Christmas like at El Rancho de las Rosas?" Isabel never tired of Esperanza's stories about her previous life. Esperanza stared up at the ceiling, searching her memories. "Mama decorated with Advent wreaths and candles. Papa set up the nativity on a bed of moss in the front hall. And Hortensia cooked for days. There were empanadas filled with meat and sweet raisin tamales. You would have loved how Abuelita decorated her gifts. She used dried grapevines and flowers instead of ribbons. On Christmas Eve, the house was always filled with laughter, and people called out, 'Feliz Navidad!' Later, we went to the cathedral and sat with hundreds of people and held candles during midnight mass. Then we came home in the middle of the night, still smelling of incense from the church, and drank warm atole de chocolate and opened our gifts." Isabel sucked in her breath and gushed, "What kind of gifts?" I can't remember," said Esperanza, braiding the yarn doll's legs. "All I remember is being happy." Then she looked around the room as if seeing it for the first time. One of the table legs was uneven and had to be propped up by a piece of wood so it wouldn't wiggle. The walls were patched and peeling. The floor was wood plank and splintery, and no matter how much she swept, it never looked clean. The dishes were chipped and the blankets frayed, and no amount of beating could remove their musty smell. Her other life seemed like a story she had read in a book a long time ago, a fairy tale. She could see the illustrations in her mind, the Sierra Madre, El Rancho de las Rosas, and a carefree young girl running through the vineyard. But now, sitting in this cabin, the story seemed as if it were about some other girl, someone Esperanza didn't know anymore. "What do you want for Christmas this year?" asked Isabel. "I want Mama to get well. I want more work. And..." She stared at her hands and took a deep breath. After 3 weeks of potato eyes, they were dried and cracked from the starch that had soaked through her gloves. "I want soft hands." "What do you want, Isabel?" Isabel looked at her with big doe eyes and said, "That's easy. I want anything." Esperanza nodded and smiled. Admiring the completed doll, she handed it to Isabel, whose eyes, as usual, were excited. They went to bed, Isabel in her cot, and Esperanza in the bed that she and Mama had slept in. She turned toward the wall, yearning for the holidays of her past, and repeated what had become a nightly ritual of silent tears. She didn't think anyone ever knew that she cried herself to sleep until she felt Isabel patting her back. "Esperanza, don't cry again. We will sleep with you if you want." "We?" She turned toward Isabel, who was holding the family of yarn dolls. Esperanza couldn't help but smile and lift the covers. Isabel slid in beside her, arranging the dolls between them. Esperanza stared into the dark. Isabel had nothing, but she also had everything. Esperanza wanted what she had. She wanted so few worries that something as simple as a yarn doll would make her happy. On Christmas Day, Esperanza walked up the front steps of the hospital while Alfonso waited in the truck. A couple passed her carrying gifts wrapped in shiny paper. A woman hurried by carrying a poinsettia plant and wearing a beautiful red wool coat with a rhinestone Christmas tree pinned to the lapel. Esperanza's eyes riveted on the coat and the jewelry. She wished she could give Mama a warm red coat and a pin that sparkled. She thought of the gift she had in her pocket. It was nothing more than a small, smooth stone that she had found in the fields while weeding potatoes. The doctor had moved Mama to a ward for people with long-term illnesses. There were only 4 other people on the floor, and the patients were spread out, their occupied beds scattered among the rows of bare mattresses in the long room. Mama slept and didn't wake even to say hello. Nevertheless, Esperanza sat next to her, crocheting a few rows on the blanket, and told Mama about the sheds and Isabel and the strikers. She told her that Lupe and Pepe could almost walk now, and that Miguel thought that Papa's roses showed signs of growth. Mama didn't wake to say goodbye either. Esperanza tucked the blanket around her, hoping that the color from the blanket would slowly seep into Mama's cheeks. She put the stone on the night table and kissed Mama goodbye. "Don't worry. I will take care of everything. I will be la patrona for the family now." Avocados. Esperanza's breath made smoky vapors in front of her face as she waited for the truck to take her to tie grapevines. She shifted from foot to foot and clapped her gloved hands together and wondered what was so new about the new year. It already seemed old, with the same routines. She worked during the week. She helped Hortensia cook dinner in the late afternoons. In the evening, she helped Josefina with the babies and Isabel with her homework. She went to see Mama on Saturdays and Sundays. She huddled in the field near a smudge pot to keep warm and mentally counted the money she would need to bring Abuelita here. Every other week, with the small amounts she saved, she bought a money order from the market and put it in her valise. She figured that if she kept working until peaches, she would have enough for Abuelita's travel. Her problem then would be how to reach Abuelita. The men went down the rows first, pruning the thick grapevines and leaving a few long branches, or canes, on each trunk. She followed along with others and tied the canes on the taut wire that was stretched post to post. She ached from the cold and had to keep moving all day long to stay warm. That night, as she soaked her hands in warm water, she realized that she no longer recognized them as her own. Cut and scarred, swollen and stiff, they looked like the hands of a very old man. "Are you sure this will work?" asked Esperanza, as she watched Hortensia cut a ripe avocado in half. "Of course," said Hortensia, removing the big pit and leaving a hole in the heart of the fruit. She scooped out the pulp, mashed it on a plate, and added some glycerin. "You've seen me make this for your mother many times. We are lucky to have the avocados this time of year. Some friends of Josefina brought them from Los Angeles." Hortensia rubbed the avocado mixture into Esperanza's hands. "You must keep it on for 20 minutes so your hands will soak up the oils." Esperanza looked at her hands covered in the greasy green lotion and remembered when Mama used to sit like this, after a long day of gardening or after horseback rides with Papa through the dry mesquite grasslands. When she was a little girl, she had laughed at Mama's hands covered in what looked like guacamole, but she had loved for her to rinse them because afterward, Esperanza would take Mama's hands and put the palms on her own face so she could feel their suppleness and breathe in the fresh smell. Esperanza was surprised at the simple things she missed about Mama. She missed her way of walking into a room, graceful and regal. She missed watching her hands crocheting, her fingers moving nimbly. And most of all, she longed for the sound of Mama's strong and assured laughter. She put her hands under the faucet, rinsed off the avocado, and patted them dry. They felt better, but still looked red and weathered. She took another avocado, cut it in half, swung the knife into the pit, and pulled it from the flesh. She repeated Hortensia's recipe, and as she sat for the second time with her hands smothered, she realized that it wouldn't matter how much avocado and glycerin she put on them. They would never look like the hands of a wealthy woman from El Rancho de las Rosas, because they were the hands of a poor campesina. It was at the end of grape tying when the doctor stopped Esperanza and Miguel in the hallway of the hospital before they could reach Mama's room. "I asked the nurses to alert me when they saw you coming. I am sorry to tell you that your mother has pneumonia." "How can that be?" said Esperanza, her hands beginning to shake as she stared at the doctor. "I thought she was getting better." "This disease, valley fever, makes the body tired and susceptible to other infections. We are treating her with medications. She is weak. I know this is hard for you, but we'd like to ask that she have no visitors for at least a month, maybe longer. We can't take a chance that she will contract another infection from any outside germs that might be brought into the hospital. Can I see her just for a few moments?" The doctor hesitated, then nodded and walked away. Esperanza hurried to Mama's bed and Miguel followed. Esperanza couldn't imagine not seeing her for so many weeks. "Mama," said Esperanza. Mama slowly opened her eyes and gave Esperanza the smallest smile. She was thin and frail. Her hair was strewn and bedraggled, and her face was so white that it seemed to fade into the sheets, as if she would sink into the bed and disappear forever. Mama looked like a ghost of herself. "The doctor said I can't come to visit for a while." Mama nodded, her eyelids slowly falling back down, as if it had been a burden to keep them up. Esperanza felt Miguel's hand on her shoulder. "Anza, we should go," he said. But Esperanza would not move. She wanted to do something for Mama to help make her better. She noticed the brush and hairpins on the bedside table. She carefully rolled Mama on her side and gathered all of her hair together. She brushed it and plaited it into a long braid. Wrapping it around Mama's head, she gently pinned it in place. Then she helped Mama lie on her back with her hair now framing her face against the white linens like a braided halo, like she used to wear it in Aguas Calientes. Esperanza bent down close to Mama's ear. "Don't worry, Mama. Remember, I will take care of everything. I am working and I can pay the bills. I love you." Mama said softly, "I love you too." And as Esperanza turned to leave, she heard Mama whisper, "No matter what happens." "You need to get away from the camp, Esperanza," said Hortensia as she handed her the grocery list and asked her to go to the market with Miguel. "It is the first of spring and it's beautiful outside." "I thought you and Josefina always looked forward to marketing on Saturday," said Esperanza. "We do, but today we are helping Melina and Irene make enchiladas. Could you go for us?" Esperanza knew they were trying to keep her occupied. Mama had been in the hospital for 3 months, and Esperanza hadn't been allowed to visit for several weeks. Since then, Esperanza hadn't been acting like herself. She went through the motions of living. She was polite enough, answering everyone's questions with the simplest answers, but she was tormented by Mama's absence. Papa, Abuelita, Mama, who would be next? She crawled into bed as early as possible each night, curled her body into a tight ball, and didn't move until morning. She knew Josefina and Hortensia were worried about her. She nodded to Hortensia, took the list, and went to find Miguel. "Be sure you tell Miguel to go to Mr. Yakota's market," Hortensia called after her. Hortensia had been right about the weather. The fog and grayness had gone. The valley air was crisp and clean from recent rains. They drove along fields of tall, feathery asparagus plants that she would soon be packing. Citrus groves displayed their leftover fruit like decorations on Christmas trees. And even though it was still cool, there was an expectancy that Esperanza could smell, a rich, loamy odor that promised spring. "Miguel, why must we always drive so far to shop at the Japanese market when there are other stores closer to Arvin?" "Some of the other market owners aren't as kind to Mexicans as Mr. Yakota," said Miguel. "He stocks many of the things we need, and he treats us like people."
"What do you mean?"
"Esperanza, people here think that all Mexicans are alike. They think that we are all uneducated, dirty, poor, and unskilled. It does not occur to them that many have been trained in professions in Mexico." Esperanza looked down at her clothes. She wore a shirtwaist dress that used to be Mama's, and before that, someone else's. Over the dress was a man's sweater with several buttons missing, which was also too big. She leaned up and looked in the mirror. Her face was tanned from the weeks in the fields, and she had taken to wearing her hair in a long braid like Hortensia's, because Mama had been right. It was more practical that way. "Miguel, how could anyone look at me and think I was uneducated?" He smiled at her joke. "The fact remains, Esperanza, that you, for instance, have a better education than most people's children in this country. But no one is likely to recognize that or take the time to learn it. Americans see us as one big brown group who are good for only manual labor. At this market, no one stares at us or treats us like outsiders or calls us dirty greasers. My father says that Mr. Yakota is a very smart businessman. He is getting rich on other people's bad manners." Miguel's explanation was familiar. Esperanza's contact with Americans outside the camp had been limited to the doctor and the nurses at the hospital. But she had heard stories from others about how they were treated. There were special sections at the movie theater for Negroes and Mexicans. In town, people did not want their children going to the same schools with Mexicans. Living away from town in the company camp had its advantages, she decided. The children all went to school together, white, Mexican, Japanese, Chinese, Filipino. It didn't seem to matter to anyone because they were all poor. Sometimes she felt as if she lived in a cocoon, protected from much of the indignation. Miguel pulled the truck into the parking lot at the market. "I'll meet you. I'm going to talk about railroad jobs with those men gathered on the corner." Esperanza went inside. Mr. Yakota was from Tokyo, and the store had all sorts of Japanese cooking ingredients like seaweed and ginger, and a fresh fish counter with fish that still had their heads. But there were Mexican products too, like masa de harina for tamales, chiles for salsa, and big bags of dried beans for frijoles. There was even cow intestine in the meat case for menudo, and other specialties like chorizo and pig's feet. Esperanza's favorite part of the store was the ceiling that was crowded with a peculiar combination of Japanese paper lanterns and piñatas shaped like stars and donkeys. There was a small tissue donkey that Esperanza had not noticed before. It was like the one Mama had bought her a few years ago. Esperanza had thought it so cute that she had refused to break it, even though it had been filled with sweets. Instead, she hung it in her room above her bed. A clerk walked by, and impulsively she pointed to the miniature piñata. "Por favor," she said, "please." She bought the other things she needed, including another money order. That was one more benefit of Mr. Yakota's market.
She could buy money orders there. She was waiting in the truck when Miguel came back. "Another money order? What do you do with them all?" asked Miguel. "I save them in my valise. They are for such small amounts, but together they'll be enough to someday bring Abuelita here." "And the piñata? It's not anyone's birthday." "I bought it for Mama. I'm going to ask the nurses to put it near her bed so she'll know that I'm thinking of her." "We can stop by the hospital on the way back. Will you cut a hole in the top for me so I can put the caramels inside? The nurses can eat them." He took out his pocket knife and made an opening in the piñata. While Miguel drove, Esperanza began feeding in the caramels. Not far down the main road, they approached an almond grove, the trees flush with gray-green leaves and white blossoms. Esperanza noticed a girl and a woman walking hand in hand, each with a grocery bag in her other arm. She couldn't help but think what a nice scene it made, with the two women framed against so many spring blossoms. Esperanza recognized one of them. "I think that is Marta." Miguel stopped the truck, then slowly backed up. "We should give her a ride." Esperanza reluctantly nodded, remembering the last time they'd given her a lift, but she opened the door. "Esperanza and Miguel, qué buena suerte." "What good luck," said Marta. "This is my mother, Ada. Thanks for the ride." Marta's mother had the same short, curly black hair, but hers was sprinkled with gray. Miguel got out and put all the groceries in the truck bed so they could sit in the front. Ada said, "I heard about your mother, and I've been praying for her." Esperanza was surprised and touched. "Thank you. I'm grateful." "Are you coming to our camp?" asked Miguel. "No," said Marta. "As you probably know, I'm not welcome there. We're going a mile or so up the road to the Strikers' farm. We were tossed out of the migrant workers' camp and were told either to go back to work or leave. So we left. We aren't going to work under those disgusting conditions and for those pitiful wages." Ada was quiet and nodded when Marta talked about the strike. Esperanza felt a twinge of envy when she noticed that Marta never let go of her mother's hand. "There are hundreds of us together at this farm, but thousands around the county, and more people join our cause each day. You are new here, but in time you'll understand what we're trying to change." "Turn left," she said, pointing to a dirt road rutted with tire marks. Miguel turned down the path, bordered in cotton fields. Finally, they reached several acres of land surrounded by chain-linked fencing and barbed wire, its single opening guarded by several men wearing armbands. "A key, right here," said Ada. "What are the guards for?" asked Esperanza. "They're for protection," said Marta. "The farmer who owns the land is sympathetic to us, but a lot of people don't like the strikers causing trouble. We've had threats. The men take turns at the entrance." Miguel pulled the truck to the side of the road and stopped. There were only 10 wooden toilet stalls for hundreds of people, and Esperanza could smell the effects from the truck. Some people lived in tents, but others only had burlap bags stretched between poles. Some were living in their cars or old trucks. Mattresses were on the ground where people and dogs rested. A goat was tied to a tree. There was a long pipe that lay on top of the ground and a line of water spigots sticking up from it. Near each spigot were pots and pans and campfire rings and the making of outdoor kitchens. In an irrigation ditch, the women were washing clothes and children were bathing at the same time. Clotheslines ran everywhere. It was a great jumble of humanity and confusion. Esperanza could not stop looking. She felt hypnotized by the squalor, but Marta and her mother didn't seem the least bit embarrassed. "Home sweet home," said Marta. They all climbed out of the truck, but before Marta and Ada could retrieve their groceries, a campesino family coming from the opposite direction approached them. The children were dirty and skinny, and the mother held an infant who was crying. "Do you have food so I can feed my family?" said the father. "We were thrown out of our camp because I was striking. My family has not eaten in 2 days. There are too many people coming into the valley each day who will work for pennies. Yesterday I worked all day and made less than 50 cents,
and I cannot buy food for one day with that. I was hoping that here, with others who have been through the same..." "You are welcome here," said Ada. Esperanza reached into the truck bed and opened the large bag of beans. "Hand me your hat, senor." The man handed over his large sun hat, and she filled it with the dried beans, then gave it back to him.
"Gracias, gracias," he said.
Esperanza looked at the two older children, their eyes watery and vacant. She lifted the piñata and held it out to them. They said nothing, but hurried toward her, took it, and ran back to their family. Marta looked at her. "Are you sure you aren't already on our side?" Esperanza shook her head. "They were hungry, that's all. Even if I believed in what you are doing, I must take care of my mother." Ada put her hand on Esperanza's arm and smiled. "We all do what we have to do. Your mother would be proud of you." Miguel handed them their bags, and they walked toward the farmer's field. Before they reached the gate, Marta suddenly turned and said, "I shouldn't be telling you this, but the strikers are more organized than they appear. In a few weeks, during asparagus, things are going to happen all over the county. We're going to shut down everything, the fields, the sheds, the railroad. If you have not joined us by then, be very careful." Then she hurried to catch up with her mother. As Miguel and Esperanza rode back to Arvin, neither of them said a word for many miles. Marta's threat and the guilt of having a job weighed heavily on Esperanza's mind. "Do you think they are right?" she asked. "I don't know," said Miguel. "What the man said is true. I have heard that there will be 10 times the people here looking for jobs in the next few months, from Oklahoma, Arkansas, Texas, and other places, too. And that they are poor people like us who need to feed their families, too. If so many come and are willing to work for pennies, what will happen to us? But until then, with so many joining the strikes, I might be able to get a job at the railroad." Esperanza's mind wrestled with Miguel's words. For him, the strike was an opportunity to work at the job he loved and to make it in this country. But for her, it was a threat to her finances, Abuelita's arrival, and Mama's recuperation. Then there was the matter of her own safety. She thought of Mama and Abuelita, and she knew there was only one thing for her to do. Esperanza studied her hands a few nights later as she walked toward the cabin and hoped Hortensia had a few more avocados. It was later than usual. She had been weeding asparagus in a far field so that she had been on the last truck. When she arrived at the cabin, everyone was crowded around the small table. There were fresh tortillas on a plate, and Hortensia was stirring a pan of machaca, scrambled eggs with shredded meat, onions, and peppers. It was Miguel's favorite, but they usually ate it for breakfast. "What is the occasion?" asked Esperanza. "I got a job in the machine shop at the railroad." "Oh, Miguel, that's good news. So many railroad workers have joined the strikers. I know it might be temporary, but if I do a good job, maybe they will keep me." "That is right," said Alfonso. "You do good work. They will see it. They will keep you." Esperanza sat down and listened to Miguel tell the others about the job. But she wasn't hearing his words. She was seeing his eyes, dancing like Papa's when he used to talk about the land. She watched Miguel's animated face, thinking that at last his dream was coming true.